Hello and welcome to the brand new midweek edition of the Liverpool Way podcast. The idea is to record this show during those boring weeks when there isn't a midweek game, and we've already got a stack of topics we're excited to bring you. Some weeks we'll pick one at random, and at other times we'll be asking you what you'd like to hear covered, so on the forum or social media. We're sure that just like today's episode, some of the topics might be influenced by who is next on the fixture list. To get things started, we'll be looking ahead to Chelsea at Anfield on Saturday evening and taking the opportunity to revisit some of the best and worst memories of our rivalry down the years. My name is Chris Smith and I'm joined by three lads I've been watching Liverpool with for more than 20 years. The editor and founder of the Liverpool Way fanzine forum and website, Dave Usher, and two long-time TLW contributors, John Gallagher and Ian Brown. Brownie, it's been a while. How are you, man?
Yeah, good, thanks, mate. All good. How are you?
Good. Yep, great, thanks, mate. And John, how are you feeling about the new season so far?
Optimistic, good start, just business as usual, as it stands at the moment, mate.
And Dave, we can't really continue without touching on the news that today Andy Robertson committed himself to Liverpool to 2026, signed the new deal, and obviously that gives everybody a bit of a boost going into the weekend.
Yeah, like a new signing, which is basically as good as we're going to get, it seems, all these new contracts. Which obviously that's a good thing. You want your best players tied down. It's just reward for Robbo. I mean, he's probably nowhere near one of the top earners, but you'd like to see him rewarded because he's so consistent. And so yeah, it's great news that he's being tied down. Just Mo next, hopefully.
Nice one. Well, good stuff. We'll be touching upon the game on Saturday a little bit later on, but first we're going to be looking back at the Chelsea rivalry, and I'll start with you, John. It hasn't always been the most traditional rivalry in the throughout the history, but there was a period, 5 or 6 years, where it kind of just burned brighter than anything else we had going on. What does the Chelsea rivalry mean to you compared to rivalries with United and Everton and that kind of thing?
Yeah, as you say, it was like a fad for a few years, the rivalry. It just erupted in like 2004 when the new managers came to town, Benitez and Mourinho. And it just escalated and like erupted that season, 2004, and it just went on for a few years, really, tit for tat and backwards and forwards. So yeah, it was enjoyable, you know, looking back, but it was, at the time, it wasn't enjoyable. So yeah, just got to see what the future brings between the two clubs.
And Brownie, what are your reflections on that time period when we seem to be playing them 4 or 5 times a season?
I absolutely despised them, Chris, to be honest, at the time. As John has said, though, I think a lot of that was to do with the manager, really. I mean, before Mourinho went there, I'd never really had any kind of thoughts about Chelsea being a rival. Since he's gone, although they've obviously been competing for the same positions in the league, again, the kind of levels of hatred that I had for them previously just aren't there anymore, really. I mean, they've gone through so many managers since Mourinho left. Obviously, he's even been back since then. Whereas we've not really had much of a turnover in management, and it's just not the same really as it was back then. I loved it. I relished it back then. I probably looked forward to playing Chelsea more than United and Everton at the time. Kind of felt like we were the good guys, they were the bad guys. They were the first team that came in with crazy money, weren't they? Obviously, Man City have taken over that mantle now. Yeah, so it's not really the same for me now. You want to beat them because they're a rival. They're trying to win the league. We want to win the league. But yeah, still not the same as it was back then, really.
And Dave, as Brownie alluded to then, it really was a clash of cultures, really, wasn't it? There was a real us and them vibe about it during those Mourinho and Benitez years.
Yeah, it was horrible. And Brownie said he looked forward to it. I suppose I did in a way, but you only look forward to it when you think things are going your way, because there's nothing worse than losing to them. To start with, we seem to get the better of it, you know, especially in the big games. And so that was enjoyable then, but once we started losing to them, it was no fun at all. But yeah, I'm struggling to think of a time when I hated an opponent as much as I hated Chelsea under Mourinho, you know, for those 3-4 years, whatever it was. As much as I hated United, like back then and still do, I don't know, the Chelsea thing was probably just as intense. And there's a few reasons for it. I mean, Mourinho was a big factor. The team as well. They had some players in that team who like absolutely couldn't stand. But it was the familiarity breeds contempt. It's like we were playing them so often. It seemed like we got them in every domestic cup. We were getting them in the Champions League. Obviously we're playing them in the league, and they were much better than us for a couple of years as well. So yeah, we were just playing them so often. And I'm sure the players hated each other as well, because when you're playing teams so often and you've got that kind of rivalry, it just escalates, it just gets worse. And yeah, for probably up until maybe, I don't know, 2010, 2011 maybe, then it felt like it wasn't quite as intense. And then you've got 2014, when they stopped us winning the league, that kind of brought it all back, it inflamed things again. But now, I don't really... Look at Chelsea, similar to, not in terms of like the level of the team, because they're much better than Arsenal and Tottenham, but in terms of like rivalry and how I feel about them, I've got no massive negative feelings towards Chelsea. There's not that much about them, other than like, you know, a section of the fan base. There's not really anything about them to really hate. Like, the players are a pretty inoffensive bunch. They change manager every year. And most of those managers have been fine, you know, compared to Mourinho anyway. So, yeah, I think it's settled down a lot just over the years. But that period with Benitez and Mourinho going to war, and obviously it's heightened by what was going on with Stevie as well. That was a really intense time.
Yeah, we're going to come back to the Stevie stuff a little bit later. But, John, obviously you're a Liverpool lad. When they showed up after Abramovich bought them out in, was it like 2004 or 2003 or something like that?
2003, we were actually the first opponents of the Abramovich era, because the season before, they were on the verge of going bankrupt. There was rumours we were going to be in for John Terry at the time, if I remember rightly, and they were really struggling. And they beat us in that winner-takes-all, if you like, Champions League qualifier to qualify mm-hmm. for the following season's Champions League. They beat us 2-1, I think. And then, as fate would have it, we were the first opponents the following season, and we lost again 2-1. So the early factors were there at that point. You know, they come into town brash. They'd signed a load of new players. You know, West signing Harry Kewell and, you know, a couple of young French lads, Pongol and Letalich, if memory serves me right. That was pretty much the start of it. The fact they come to Anfield waving the £50 notes and singing Roman and Abramovich's name, and the rest is history, as they say.
I remember that game, that first game of the Abramovich era, really well. They were just, the whole game they were singing about how loaded they were, and it really was just like it was like an episode of Harry Enfield in a microcosm. It was ridiculous, but that was the era. Until then, they were kind of inoffensive. No one really had any problems with that Ranieri side. But what are some of the games that stand out to you beyond that period? Which are the ones that you think of first? I'll start with you, Brownie, when you're thinking about that era of just, I think we played them 26 times in the 6 seasons that Benitez was at the club. So which are the games that stand out for you?
Yeah, you've obviously got the semi-final, haven't you? The second leg at Anfield, the ghost goal and everything that came with that. I mean, they still talk about it now, don't they? Mourinho can't help himself going on about that, about the goal. And it winds me up that nobody, you know, points out to him that if we hadn't have had the goal, we'd have had the sending off and the penalty. Thank you very much. But no, that one really, that's the big one. Plus also the FA Cup semi-final. As Dave alluded to earlier, we actually started off quite well in the rivalry in terms of the games and the results. We kind of got one over them on 2 big semi-finals. But then a couple of years after that, they kind of got their own back, didn't they, in the Champions League, if you like. But no, it would mainly be those first couple of semi-finals, to be honest. They would stick out for me in a good way anyway. I remember them like yesterday. They were huge occasions. I've never been so wound up going into 2 games as a footy fan. As Dave said earlier, the rivalry at that point was hatred. I don't think I've ever felt like that about another football team, which, you know, looking back on it now, I'm not really proud, to be honest, about how I felt. I got that wound up whenever we played against them. It was just desperate to beat them. It felt like we were Rocky Balboa and they were Ivan Drago. You know, it was kind of just, it just meant so much. We had to beat them. It just didn't matter how you did it. You just had to beat them. That was all I felt going into them games. And yeah, we'll probably get to some incidents later on in the pod about what the result of that is, really. But yeah, it was very intense, yeah.
I was going to say, you had a better day than most of us during that FA Cup semi-final at Old Trafford, didn't you?
Allegedly, yeah. so I've been told. I think the biggest thing to come out of that day, to be honest, is drink responsibly, kids. That would be the biggest message to come out of that one, yeah. But I'm sure we'll get to that down the line.
Yeah, I think we should get
to
that now.
Do you want to pick that up?
Yeah. I think we need to get to that now, Brownie.
I'll get off now. See you later, lads. Nice meeting you all.
So obviously Brownie's not going to remember too much, but fortunately for him, I remember all of it as clear as anything. So like probably best start at the beginning. So we meet up with him in Manchester, a few of the lads in the forum, we met up before the game. At this point, Brownie's already just completely wellied. So then when we're going into the grounds, we're on the car park and he's singing like Rafa in Istanbul. He's singing it on his own and like everyone's just like looking at him and just having a laugh and that. Nobody's joining in. And then there's another lad on the other side of the car park who's obviously as hammered as Brownie. So he joins in. So then you've got the two of them singing across to each other. We're all just laughing our heads off going, look at the state of Brownie. So then when we see him at full time, he comes out and he's been drinking like during the game at half time, which at this point you should probably say, fair play to him. He's the only person I know that's ever pulled at the match. Like he started talking to some girl in the queue at half time. ends up snogging it under the concourse. Goes back up, watches the second half, we win the game, he comes out, and then we're all waiting around afterwards to meet up, because there's like, you know, probably about, I think there's about six or eight of us and we were going to walk back into Manchester. So by the time like we'd all met up, like we were in the section where all the Liverpool fans were coming out, but by the time we'd all met up, they'd all gone. And all of a sudden, like coming around the other side of the stadium is all the Chelsea fans who got out and they're making a way around. So it's like the Orcs marching to Mordor. There's just like thousands and thousands of them walking down the road. So we're thinking, okay, we probably need to get a bit of a move on here. Not Brownie though. Brownie's walking towards them and he's pointing in people's faces and he's going, we're going to Cardiff, we're going to Cardiff, you're not. You're not like pointing in individual Chelsea fans' faces, and we're thinking this is not going to end well here. You know, we need to get him away. To be fair, most of the Chelsea fans, they realised he was bevied and they were just like, yeah, whatever, mate, and not really paying too much attention. We managed to get him away, and then we start walking towards Manchester. Next thing, he runs away and he runs after these two Chelsea fans who are in front. He taps one of them on the shoulder and he goes, excuse me, mate, I'm just wondering, did Garcia's goal go over the line this time? Chelsea fan looks at him like a little bit confused and he just goes, yeah, mate, think it did, yeah. And he goes, you think it did? It nearly burst the net, you knobhead. And then they're just going, oh my God, he's going to get us killed. So like we just about managed to just calm him down and get him out the way before he got all of us killed. Like, but looking back on it, it was just like, it was one of the funniest things ever. And that game, probably all the games against Chelsea, that what apart from the 2005 semi, that's probably number two for me. And it's mainly just due to how funny the whole day was and especially like Brownie's antics. It was just like, yeah, it was just legendary. I'll never forget it.
That was Brownie, a boss day.
To say was, counter?
Just it was a boss day. I mean, to be fair, half of that Dave's just said there, I didn't even know half of that. So that was like a boss little story to listen to. I only remember little bits of it. But I think I missed Garcia's goal, you know. Literally when Garcia scored it, I was necking that bird. It was on the screen.
It wasn't at the start of the second half, that yeah. So
it was. It was on the screen behind it. Like I was necking. We scored. I threw it out the way. Not legging it to the telly. It was boss. Like right, so you've had your go now. Here's the main stuff. And then went back to my seat. No, I mean obviously it was a bit daft. You look back now, you get a bit older, don't you? You get a bit more mature, a bit wiser, and you think, what was I playing at? But no, it was a brilliant day. I mean, I went out around Manchester that night as well. I remember being in pubs in Manchester singing Liverpool songs as well, which is another thing you wouldn't really advise to be doing. But no, I kept going all night. Honestly, as I say, it was just, those games are so big that the high that you were on after beating them, just I've never felt like that even since, to be honest. And you know, we've got some massive rivalries in football, haven't we, when you think about it, but nothing's ever been close to that. And it's hard to put your finger on it. And it must just be the whole Mourinho factor for me, because I despised that man so much at the time. He just brought the worst out of me, really.
John, Dave and Brownie have covered probably the two obvious ones from that era, but are there any of the other games that stand out to you as being really special, for better or worse?
Actually, the first leg in that 2005 semi-final, I actually went down to London and met with a few lads off the forum, Christian and a couple of others, and just the occasion being down there for a European Cup semi-final, I didn't go to the game, I wasn't lucky to get a ticket, but there was thousands of Reds, like, you know, round Trafalgar Square. And it was just felt like, you know, we were back, you know, back where we belong. And it was just a great day. You know, the fact that I didn't go to the game and I ended up watching it in a pub probably half a mile away from Stamford Bridge just added to it in some ways. And, yeah, it was just like a special time. We drew 0-0, which was a good result. You know, back then in Europe, a 0-0 away was like seen as a good result. So it was a perfect day almost, apart from, you know, we could have won, but... You know, the 0-0 going back to Anfield for the second leg, definitely.
Yeah, I think we were all pretty happy with that and kind of just over the moon that we were still in the tie and had a chance to go through, because they were, that season, didn't they? They were kind of untouchable, weren't they? Nobody could get near them. And I think they conceded about 13 goals all season or something ludicrous like that. So we went into that game as just massive underdogs. It was, I remember being really chuffed that we were going to have the chance to come back to Anfield. And I think we all felt pretty good about that then. Dave, we've covered some of the highest highs from the rivalry, but as high as the highs have been, the lows were also equally as just catastrophic. Like, what are some of your memories of those games?
There's two that really stand out. There was, you know, 2014 when they stopped us winning the league. That was really bad. But probably just that was just devastation. But I think arguably even worse than that was the League Cup final in 2005. That was horrible, not just because we lost, but just the whole circumstances around it, where they'd been tapping up Gerrard and he produced an absolutely horrific performance, capped by an own goal, which was, albeit it was unfortunate, the own goal could have happened to anyone. The bigger issue there was his performance. He was terrible. He got cramp after 70 minutes, I think, as well, which is, that just shows you that mentally he was not in a good place for that game, you know, just the emotional drain on him, for him to be getting cramp. It was just really unpleasant. It was, you know, Mourinho was shushing the crowd as well, I think, that day. And that one stands out as being absolutely, well, it's one I'd rather forget, to be honest. It was, that was awful.
I do think that's one of the angriest I've ever seen you at a football match, in a sort of wanting to... really, really fall out quite seriously with one of our more illustrious fans, but that's might be another story for another time.
Yeah, I think probably John will want to tell that one.
I'm more than happy.
Yeah, I've had mine
with that one.
I thought you would be, John.
Yeah, so obviously it was absolute devastation at the end. People say it was only the League Cup, but it was just a build up to that game. It was like, you know, we'd lost 1-0 at Stamford Bridge in the league, and I think it was the October, Joe Cole scored, surprisingly. And then New Year's Day, again, Joe Cole scored, surprisingly, deflected goal as well. We battered them for, I think it was like 75 minutes, and I think they scored in the last like 10 or 15 minutes. You had the broken leg, shabby broken leg by Lampard. So it was just building as the season went on. I've never been so up for a game as I was that game. And obviously I was sat with Dave that game as well. So we're all deflated coming out. And, you know, Gerrard's getting loads of abuse, unfortunately. Not off Dave per se, but just in general, of fans coming out the ground. And I think Badgeman, he's quite a famed member of the Liverpool supporters, he come out with some sarcastic comment. I can't remember specifically what it was, but... basically, Dave just turned. Like, Dave, you know, we all know Dave, great lad, most placid lad you'll ever know, known him for over 20 years. Basically, turned into Thunderlips in Rocky 3. you know, wanting to attack him. And, you know, if he'd have been anywhere near the River Taff, I think he'd have thrown him in there, to be honest with you. But, it just I think that was the only funny thing that happened that day that stands out, because the rest of the day was, you know, was pretty deflating. You know, how it all turned out, we were winning for so long. You know, Stevie with the own goal late on, and we ended up losing 3-2. So, as I say, Dave's touched on the shushing the fans. Lampard in his interview after the game saying, "See you next season," about Stevie, which, honestly, I've never felt so much anger coming out of a football ground. You know, it's just an absolutely horrible day all round, to be fair.
So with the Badgeman thing, I probably need to clear that up. It wasn't my finest hour, but the reason I got so upset was so many fans were like wound up about Gerrard's performance and Lampard coming over and stretching him when he had cramp, and you know, the Mourinho coming up to him at the end, and it was just blatantly obvious the way Chelsea were tapping him up. So fans were understandably like furious about it, and you know, rightly so. So was I. I mean, I wasn't like shouting abuse at Gerrard. I just wanted to get out the stadium. But some lads were like, you know, upset about it. And Badgeman was telling them, you know, like to basically show some respect, and he doesn't deserve this and all that. And I thought, hang on a minute, you know, you can't be telling people not to be angry when they've got every right to be angry. So that was what wound me up. And I don't remember what he said, but whatever it was, it kind of just tipped me over the edge, and John had to basically drag me out of the Millennium Stadium. It was, as I say, not my finest hour at all.
Well, I think most of us would say you were justified in that instance. So, yeah, it happened. Nobody got hurt. Didn't change the result. And here we are, beat them in the semi-final a couple of months later. So, before we get onto a preview of the weekend, I want to do a little bit of word association with you guys. And we've covered some of these a little bit, but Bryony, we'll start with you. I'm going to mention some people who have an association with both of our clubs, and just tell me what the first things that come into your head is. Fernando Torres.
First thing that comes into my head about Fernando Torres. To be honest, I mean, I used to love Nando, but obviously the way he left soured everything. So what sticks in my mind is he completely down tools, hadn't he, early for us by the end. And then Chelsea came to town. They must have been talking to each other in the background about him going there. And then suddenly he turned into the old Nando and banged a couple of goals in, didn't he? I think it was under Hodgson, wasn't it? And then before long, he'd gone off and signed for them. So yeah, I don't have great memories of Nando for that reason, to be honest. That's what sticks in my mind whenever I think about him.
There's kind of been a little bit of revisionism lately among, you know, the Liverpool content output and the LFC family, where Torres has kind of been welcomed back into the fold a little bit now. Like, you see highlights of his goals on their channels all of the time. Yet someone like Michael Owen doesn't really get any recognition whatsoever. John, do you think that that's fair, or what do you think the reasoning is behind? Because they both kind of left in really dodgy circumstances.
I absolutely don't think it's fair. It's one of my main bugbears. How that has all come to pass. You know, Torres, as Brownie said, down tools. His one good performance that season was against, you know, the club who were going to be signing him a couple of months later. Owen, however he left, he was absolutely professional to his last game. Always gave his best in an absolutely average Liverpool team, let's be honest. Went to Madrid. I understand why he went there. You know, we still got some money for him. You know, that's his choice. The thing with Owen that always like saddens me is his first game back, when he came back with Newcastle and fans singing, "Where were you in Istanbul?" It's just like, even today, it just leaves a sour note for me. So after that moment, I'm thinking, well, Michael Owen owes us absolutely nothing. You know, he went to Manchester United. There was, I think, Everton and Hull were in for him. So let's face it, as a professional, Liverpool or not, Owen was all about, you know, he's not like built like Fowler in terms of how he sees things. You know, he's not from the city. So if he wanted to go to United, I'm not going to wish him luck as such, but I understand why he went there. But obviously that was like too much for a lot of fans. But as I say, the first trip back for Newcastle, I'm thinking Owen has probably thought, well, I owe you nothing. You know, I haven't got an answer like to anyone, like in Liverpool's fan base, you know, for that reason.
Yeah, I agree completely. Dave, are you able to look at the Torres' time at Liverpool fondly now, or with balance, or just does it still leave a bitter taste in your mouth?
he's dead to me. I've got no beef with him anymore, but I've got no affection for him either. And it's not to do with the fact he left. It's not to do with the fact he went to Chelsea, which in itself was pretty unacceptable considering the way the rivalry was at that point. People will say, well, you know, he never went to Man United, he went to Chelsea. Well, at that time, the rivalry with Chelsea was just as bad as it was with United. So I don't necessarily buy that argument, but it's the down and tools aspect of it that's what soured me against him. If he hadn't played the way he did against Chelsea and showed that he still had it, I could have maybe given the benefit of the doubt and said he's just finished, he was washed up. You know, the injuries that he'd had taken too heavy a toll. But you've seen him play like that against Chelsea and you thought, oh, he's still got it in the locker to do that. Why haven't we seen that for months? And it was just little things like him not chasing through balls down channels and that. Like the one that sticks out to me is a derby at Goodison. And I think Carragher was playing right back. And first few minutes of a derby are just horrendously frantic. It's like tackles flying in. You've got no time on the ball. So Carragher gets the ball. He's closed down. He knocks it down the channel, expecting Torres to be running the channels, which is what you'd expect your striker to be doing. And he didn't chase it. And he just looked back and he made some gesture to Carragher, like, you know, what the hell is that? Play it to feet. And I thought, no, even if you thought that was a bad ball, it's your job to go and chase that. It's a derby game. It's frantic. You chase everything. You try to win a throw-in. And he didn't want to know. And that was, I was watching him and like the crowd are all singing his name and that. And I'd be watching him going, he's kidding you. He's singing his name. Look at him. He's not even trying. It's like, remember the game when Joe Cole got sent off? When we played, it was Arsenal at Anfield, first game of the season. And
yeah,
David Ngog played that game. And I mean, don't get me wrong, he scored some goals, but he was way out of his depth. He was never a Liverpool player. But I've got a lot of time for him because he always gave his best. And that game, he ran himself into the ground for about 80 minutes. We were down to 10 men. Everyone was fighting for everything. And Ngog just, he come off the pitch and he was just goosed. He'd worked that hard. And Torres came on for 10 minutes. And he was stood there just letting Arsenal centre-backs pass the ball around amongst themselves. And I looked at him and thought, you're only on for 10 minutes. I know you're not fully fit because you're only just back from injury. But 10 minutes running around when your teammates have all just, they've put so much into that game. And I think Arsenal equalised late on, didn't he? And that was the first red flag with Torres, was that day. And then I watched him after that. And it was, you could see that he wasn't putting a shift in. And that's the thing. It bothers me that fans seem to have forgotten about that. And like, Michael Owen's public enemy number one, but Torres is like back in the fold. And oh yeah, we all love Nando. Let's do the bounce and all that. No, it's as I say, I don't bear any grudge anymore, but I've got no affection for him either.
And the only good thing to come out of him leaving to Chelsea really was the game the following weekend when we played there and Raul Morella scored. And that was just, I know we've talked a little bit about games that we were just so desperate to win. That's one that stands out for me, just really just desperately wanting to stick it to him. And then I had a few mates that were at that one who were just beside themselves when he was substituted with about 20 minutes to go and we were 1-0 up and everything. So at least he gave us that.
And he got a forearm smash from Agger as well in that game. You remember that?
Yes, he did.
Agger just flattened him.
So, a couple more before we move on to this weekend's game. It's, if we're going to talk about the height of the Liverpool-Chelsea rivalry, Steven Gerrard's name has to come up. John, do you hold any grudges towards Gerrard for his flirtation with Chelsea, or is that water under the bridge to you?
Well, at the time, I definitely held a grudge against Gerrard, but obviously he remained loyal. You know, obviously his family members sorted his head out, basically. Told him that if he wins a couple of league titles at Chelsea, it won't be, he's not going to be able to show them to anyone 30, 40 years down the line when he's got grandkids. You know, so in the grand scheme of things, no, because he remained loyal, as I say. You know, he produced, you know, many more great moments over the next, like, 10 years or so. That he was with us. So, you know, Gerrard's place overall is still as an absolute legend for me. One of the greatest players in the club's history and always will be. So, you know, I've got nothing but affection for Steve, you know. If that makes me two-faced, then so be it.
No, not at all. Brownie, nobody quite experienced the lows of our rivalry with Chelsea like Gerrard. We've talked about the own goal in the League Cup final and everything that ensued from that. There was also the Demba Ba slip in 2014. I mean, surely, like, he has got like zero fond memories of any experiences with Chelsea whatsoever, apart from the European Cup semi-finals.
No, he must look back at Chelsea and he must just hate them, mustn't he? You know, because you go back to what John said there. I mean, at the time of when he was flirting with signing for them, I mean, I felt exactly the same as John. I was really, really pissed off, you know, because he was our talisman, wasn't he? Like, he was all we had at that point, really. So the thought of losing him to who had become such a massive rival of ours, it was just horrible, wasn't it? But at the time, I felt like he had a lot of making up to do, and he certainly did that over the years. But now, I mean, he can't look at back at anything to do with Chelsea and have anything but bad memories, really, can he? I mean, as you've pointed out there, there's not many particular games, really, where he's excelled against them to kind of make up for it. I always looked out in the games afterwards, after all that stuff, to see whether he would have that kind of defining moment where he kind of paid his back a little bit, and I don't think it ever really happened. In fact, it went the other way, didn't it, with what happened in 2014. So maybe there's another chapter to be written in the future with that, is what I would say.
I think the symbolic Gerrard backpash in 2010, you know, we had nothing to play for, seventh in the league or whatever it was, and Stevie plays that, let's say, iffy backpass to Drogba to run onto and slot it past the keeper. I think looking back, that was like the end of that Liverpool-Chelsea rivalry, as it was in that period of a few years.
Did Stevie do anything against Chelsea at all?
No.
Have I totally
that,
lost
no.
my mind? He didn't do a thing, no. did he? Because when I was no. saying it, I was like, I was always waiting, you know, for him to have a moment where he did something in a dead big game against them, and it was like, right, that's it, you've paid it back and all that. Just felt like it never happened.
It never happened.
I can't remember anything.
I remember him scoring one when they trashed us 4-1 at
Anfield.
Oh,
yeah,
Anfield.
I remember that one as well.
Yeah,
that was another embarrassing.
That was the equaliser.
Yeah, it was, and then he battered us after that, didn't he? That was another embarrassing one for me, that. I was with our Mike watching it, and I was on about the third row at the Anfield Road, and the stuff I was saying to Frank Lampard, I looked like a blue nose appealing for the corner. I was that angry. It was like, but honestly, that time just brought the worst out of me. I fucking hated them.
That's what I mean. That semi-final 2005, to this day, that's the most stressed I've ever been at a game. You know, I know we've won trophies and we've had big games since, but I just think that that 05 semi was in 96 minutes. It was a European Cup semi-final you should be enjoying, but it was...
That was
fuck, wasn't it?
Remember Good Johnson at the end and everything.
It felt like the longest game ever. You know, I know we'll have had 98-99 minute matches, but that, it just seemed to drag because we scored so early. Think like the whole like aftermath of it, you know, we're hanging on, aren't we? And I remember shouting, get Nunes on. Just someone who could carry the ball, honestly. Someone who
Do you remember though,
Johnny,
did that boss run down the right wing with
that's what
in
we needed.
Stoppage time? It took up about a minute. It was fucking
just best thing down, he ever did was kill a bit of time.
I know. Yeah. And he actually scored in the League Cup final, didn't he? When we got beat, he scored in that game.
Yeah, he did.
I remembered another game, another low against Chelsea. Can you remember that Champions League one where hadn't he beat us 3-1 at Anfield, and then it looked like we were going to have a mad comeback in the away game? Didn't we go 4-1 up or
4-1
up or something? And then he got a couple of goals. It went to extra time, or was it really late in the game where
they
got a couple of goals?
Yeah, it finished 4-4.
That was horrible, because that was nearly the best thing ever, that. You know, like, it was Aurelio with that free kick, wasn't it?
That's right.
So, I just looked this up, and Steven Gerrard's record against Chelsea is played 40, scored 2, 3 assists, 8 bookings, and a red card.
Jesus. There you go. Yeah. As I say, maybe it's defining moments to come. I know a lot of people don't want to see that, which is fair enough. I understand that, but you never know.
The hot take of the evening is definitely that Antonio Nunes was a better Liverpool player against Chelsea than Steven Gerrard.
Incredible.
Can't argue with stats, can you?
I know.
Just little things coming back to my head now as well. I remember Essien, and remember we got them in the group stage of the Champions League the year after Istanbul, and we actually drew them in the group stage. It was 0-0, surprisingly, home and away.
Both of them, but
Essien done an absolutely shocking tackle on Haman, I remember. Just sticks
out my
mind to this day. It was at Stamford Bridge, wasn't it? In the group game, it was just a disgusting tackle. I'll have to try and find that on YouTube or something. But yeah, I just remember that Essien, obviously, he had the Lampard Alonso one the season before, and then Essien nearly ending Haman's career. I remember.
Big thing I remember from that it was New Year's Day, wasn't it? That,
yeah,
when he beat his 1-0 Joe Cole. Yeah, I remember that they had a midfielder, didn't he? Was he called Thiago? Thiago, Mendes. And he had a blatant handball at the cop end.
Yeah, that's right,
which we didn't get. And I remember going nuts in the cop about that. And then they scored later. Yeah.
And we battered them that game. But that Chelsea
team... Yeah, we
did.
We played really well.
I do them a disservice looking back at it now. I've said that they were so ruthless and efficient, weren't they? You know, it was a proper powerful outfit. You know, we used to say, oh, spawny bastards, this, that and the other, but... You know, they just had that know-how, didn't they, and how to win games and that.
You couldn't break them down. That was the worst thing. They used to come to Anfield and you just had to play so well just to create a chance against them. They were so solid at the back. They had Teddy Carvalho was boss as well around that time. It was just hard to create a chance against them, wasn't it?
Makélélé sitting in front of them.
Makélélé, yeah. I wanted to mention something about Hazard, because every time I go to Anfield and they had Hazard...
Yeah.
I would just be scared. I've never been scared of an opposition player as much as him. He was just boss against us all the time, wasn't he?
At Stamford Bridge, but as you say, at Anfield,
he just had us on toast all the time. Yeah. I was always like, oh no. Whenever he got the ball, I was always worried he was going to do something. And it's obviously a sign of a boss player, isn't it, really?
Okay, so there are a couple of others on my list that I wanted to touch on. Maybe we'll get to those at another time. But I want to move on to the game at the weekend. We've spoken a lot about what caused the rivalry to fizzle out a little bit. But do you think, Dave, with Thomas Tuchel at Chelsea and us both probably going head-to-head with City for the league this season, do you think it could be on the way back?
Not really. I think it'll just be... a normal type of rivalry where they're in our way, we're in their way. You know, we're trying to win the league, and they're going to be one of our rivals. I don't think you're going to have that like intense hatred that was there. A few reasons, really. Firstly, you've got no Mourinho. Secondly, even if they were to try to tap up our best player, they'd be totally wasting the time. You know, we're not going to sell anybody to them. We're in a much better financial position than we were back then, and we can offer players whatever they need here. So I don't think that's going to come back. And also, as I said before, you know, the Chelsea team, they've not got like John Terry and Lampard and Ashley Cole and Drogba. It's just people you couldn't stand. There's nobody really like that. There might be somebody who maybe he'll do something this weekend that'll wind us up, but it's totally different to the way it was back then. So it's going to be a normal rivalry rather than anything exceptional, I think. And again, that's only if Chelsea stay up at the top of the league, or if we stay up at the top of the league. If one of us was to fall down a little bit and not be challenging for the title, it's not really going to be much of a rivalry left. It's Man City these days, really. Obviously, United's always going to be like the hated rival, but I think for various reasons, City are... They may well have even eclipsed United for me at the moment. It's like, you know, for whatever United are or aren't, at least they're not blatantly cheating, you know, breaking all the financial rules in the book. So I think my big beef at the moment is definitely City rather than Chelsea.
Fair enough. So they come into the game on Saturday with a 100% record as well. I watched them against Arsenal at the weekend and I was quite impressed with them. I thought there was a real purpose and rhythm about their play. And adding Lukaku has only added to that. Brownie, how did you feel about them at the weekend? And could you kind of write it off because it was Arsenal?
Arsenal are an absolute shambles, aren't they? It's hard to take too much out of it for that reason, to be honest. I'd fancy anyone to beat Arsenal at the moment. They're just an absolute embarrassment. I mean, Lukaku obviously had an impressive debut, but what that Pablo Mari, or whatever he's called, was trying to do against them, I will never know. I mean, he was breaking every single defensive rule that you've got when you come up against somebody like Lukaku, who's getting too tight. He was allowing himself to get rolled. He was getting bullied. So now I wouldn't put too much in that, to be honest with you. I don't think it was much of a barometer for anything. He's a good signing, Lukaku, for them. He's clearly a top player. But I don't think he's ever, unless any of the other boys can remember anything, I don't recall the time when we've played Chelsea and he's done anything, really, or any of the other teams he's played for, even when he played for the Manx. I don't think he did anything against us. So I don't really worry too much about him. I think our centre-halves, as well as we saw on the weekend against Burnley, they're built to play against a big, strong striker who wants to have a bit of a physical duel, you know what I mean? I think we're well-stocked in that type of player to be able to deal with that. So if Lukaku's what we should be worried about, then I'm not really necessarily worried. That there's other areas in the Chelsea side where I'd be a little bit more concerned than him, to be honest with you. Hopefully that won't come back to bite me in the arse.
So this is where we're at with Lukaku at the moment. He's 7 games against us without a goal, 3 for Everton and 4 for United, and he played 90 minutes in all of them. And overall, he's got 5 goals in 17 games against us, and 2 of those for when he was on loan at West Brom. But John, is he a little bit of a different beast now? He's playing with much better players, and he's not going to be playing for a team that is just relying, where he's just relying on nothing balls from teams that are coming to Anfield just to defend, like United did under Van Gaal and Mourinho, and obviously Everton forever. So is it going to be a different proposition on Saturday? He looks like he's at the absolute peak of his powers at the moment.
Yeah, obviously he's perfect for 28, I think he is now, so he has matured into that like top class striker that you thought he would be when he was like 18, 19. He's just such a physical specimen. You know, it's sort of one of those situations where, you know, if the centre-backs do play well, which I expect them to, I don't see him getting much change out of them. So, you know, as Brownie said, absolute top player. He looks like he's lost a bit of weight as well since he was at Manchester United. You know, he looks like he's probably lost about a stone. His confidence aside, rattling goals in Serie A, I think it was something like 25, 30 goals. So, yeah, you know, he's going to give the centre-backs a game. But as Brownie said, if he's the main worry, then I'm not unduly concerned overall.
Dave, we generally do well against the top strikers. We find a way to shut them down. It's happened with Kane quite a lot down the years. But it's a bit of a test for Virg, isn't it? Like, he's just coming back into the team after a long layoff. Like, how do you expect him to deal with it on Saturday?
Yeah, I really don't like this conversation. I'm listening to Brownie and John, and I'm thinking, shut up, you're just tempting fate. He's going to bang in a hat-trick at the weekend now, and it'll be all your fault. So I think Lukaku's, I think he's brilliant. The only thing that I'd say is he tends to get most of his goals not against the top teams, but against everybody else. And I don't even mean that as a criticism. You know, like you could call him a flat track bully, and I don't see that as an insult really, because there's a place for that. You know, if you've got somebody who can break down all of these teams, score goals against, like, you know, Watford, Burnley, Everton, Norwich, those kind of teams. If you've got someone who can do that, it doesn't matter if they don't score in the big games, because most of the games you play are not against the top teams. And I think that's where Chelsea have been lacking. Like the strikers who they've had, like Werner didn't do much last season. Before that, they've had Morata who struggled for goals. So if Lukaku comes in and does what he's always done, that automatically makes Chelsea a lot stronger, I'd say. As for whether our defenders can deal with him, well, yeah, you know, but the only thing I'd say to that is you can have a fantastic game and completely, you know, do everything right and he could still score. You know, sometimes there's just things that it'll fall to him and there's nothing you can do. So I'm not worried in terms of, oh no, we've got Virgil, how's he going to cope with Lukaku? I'm sure he'll cope with him well, but that doesn't mean that a chance isn't going to fall his way and he might put it away or whatever. But I think Chelsea are just, they're a good all-round team, and they've kind of got like 2 players for every position as well, which that's probably their biggest strength. Because if you go like, you know, the starting lineup, I'm not really taking, I wouldn't take any of their players, but I look at our 11 and I look at Chelsea's 11 and I'm not really wanting to swap much, if anything. But where Chelsea are really strong is the players who they can bring in when they do have to make changes. So I think that's why they're probably going to be right up there at the end of the season. But I do think that we're the best team in the country. I think we've got the best team, not necessarily the deepest squad, but it's deep enough unless we get like some really bad luck with injuries in the same position. Like last year when all the injuries came in the same part of the team. You know, nobody can cope with that. I mean, we actually cope with that brilliantly, all things considered, to finish third with like a centre-back pair and a Reece Williams and Nat Phillips. I mean, none of the other teams are going to be able to do that. I think like the depth is Chelsea's biggest strength, but is that going to be enough of a strength for them to finish above us if unless we get a load of injuries? I don't think so. I still make us favourites to win it, and fairly strong favourites at that.
Brownie, we've kind of talked about the threat that Chelsea pose, but Klopp doesn't really tend to worry too much about that if we do what we're supposed to be doing. So what do you think the keys for the game are going to be for us on Saturday night? Obviously, having a full Anfield is going to be a big factor compared to the last time we had Chelsea at Anfield.
Yeah, just what you've said there yourself, Chris. I think it's more about focusing on what we do. I mean, we've got a very set way of playing, haven't we? I mean, if you go into a big game against a big team and they've got world-class players, you'd have certain managers, wouldn't you, who'd be looking at, right, you man-mark this guy, you man-mark that guy. It's just not what Kloppo does. He trusts our lads to go 1v1, doesn't he, against the big threats and come out on top. I think the crowd's the big thing, to be honest, because, I mean, they came to Anfield and won fairly comfortably last year, didn't they? But, I mean, I've completely written the season off anyway. And certainly that run of games where we lost a few at home and around it, there's no way that would have happened if we'd have had the crowd at Anfield. I don't think you can overestimate how important that's going to be on the weekend. It'll be interesting to see how they cope with it, with it being a kind of later kickoff, and a few people will have had a couple of shandies, myself included. So I think it'll be that'll be the biggest test, really. I don't see us changing the way we play to kind of suit how they're going to approach the game. I think we're just going to be pressing high up the pitch, high octane, high energy, hopefully get the ball to Sadio and Mo in the final third and let them do their thing, really.
John, just following on from what Brownie said there, who do you think are the key players for us at the weekend, and where do you think the game will be won and lost?
Well, as Brownie said, you're looking at Sadio and Mo, and, well, the front three, you know, it's especially Mo, though. I've just got a feeling, Mo, because I'm looking at Chelsea and, well, obviously, formidable team. I'm looking at Marcus Alonso. I think he started the first couple of games. I'm thinking Mo will really fancy that. You know, isolating him. Obviously, Chelsea play a back three. He's like the wing back, but I'm thinking of Mo can isolate the left sided centre back. You know, you've got Trent on that side as well. I'm just wondering, would Alonso be able to like stand up to that for 90 minutes? So I'm thinking that could be the key area where we win the game, to be honest with you.
And Dave, what team would you send out on Saturday?
I think it's the team more or less picks itself, assuming Fabinho's available. Robbo's going to come back in, obviously. The rest of the back four, we know what that's going to be. Alisson in goal, Fabinho, Henderson, and then one other, probably Keita, unless Thiago was a really good week of training and they think he's ready for it. Because, I mean, I think we know our first choice midfield is going to be Thiago, Henderson and Fabinho. It's whether it's a little bit too soon for that or not, we'll see. I personally think Keita may well start. As much as I was impressed with Harvey, I don't think Chelsea at home is a game for him just yet. So I think they'd probably go with the experience of Keita or Thiago. Possibly even Milner might come back into it. I don't know how bad his injury is, but I'd expect it to be Keita. And I do think that Bobby's going to come back in up front just because I think it's a different type of game to, you know, Norwich and Burnley. You know, Chelsea's a step up. It's the tried and trusted. We know, I said last week after the Burnley podcast when we touched on the Chelsea game, I think the main reason for picking Bobby is just because we're going to need Sadio and Mo at their best. We're going to need them getting chances. And the best way to do that is to have Bobby in the team with them rather than Jota, who he'll be getting on the end of chances himself. But he's not necessarily going to be creating things or creating space for Sadio or Mo. So I think Bobby will probably get the nod. And in terms of who's going to be the key men, it's every game for me. I always say, you know, if the front three play well, we'll win, regardless of who we're playing. And the games, if you look back, the games where we haven't won, and I don't even like talking about last season because it was just such a complete farce. But even going back the season before, any games where it didn't quite go for us, it's usually because the front three have not quite been at it. You know, they've missed chances or the final ball's been poor. Whenever the front three play well, we'll win the game. I've got absolutely no doubt about that because the rest of the team is really consistent. You know, you know what you're going to get from them pretty much all the time. It's just the front three can be a little bit streaky. So if they play well, we'll win the game. I've got absolutely no doubt about that. But I'm not going to sit here and say they'll definitely play well and we'll definitely win because, you know, it doesn't always work like that. But I do think Bobby's going to come back in, and the main reason will be to try to get as much as we can out of Sadio and Mo.
Brownie, would you go along with that, bringing Bobby back in instead of Jota for the weekend?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've been saying for a while, to be fair, that I'd love to see Jota get a regular run playing as the central kind of striker in the front three. Just because, I mean, Bobby's declined so much over the last couple of years that it's almost been a bit painful to watch him. But I think in these games, Bobby's pressing is really important. I don't think Diogo yet is kind of at that same level when it comes to knowing exactly when to initiate that press. I mean, the stuff Bobby does off the ball, a lot of the time you don't notice it. It's not very glamorous, but I think it's really important, especially in the big games. He's got a knack of nicking the ball back in really dangerous areas, which I don't think Jota's got that yet. I think he looks a little bit lost in the last couple of games playing up front. I mean, he scored in both of them, which is, you know, fantastic, obviously. But in terms of the build-up play and everything, I don't think he's looked like that really suits his position. Whereas Bobby knows it inside out, and these big games are made for Bobby, so I'd definitely bring him back in, yeah.
What's the score going to be?
I think 2-1 to us. I think we'll have to go through a bit of adversity. Maybe they'll take the lead, and, you know, there'll be a bit of a question mark as to how we'll react to it, but I think we'll come through it. I think we'll have some tough moments in the game, but I fancy us to come through and win 2-1.
And John, I mean, we're only two games into the season, so by any means it's not a must-win game, but if you win it, it's a huge, huge boost. But if you lose it, gosh, it really sets us back going into that international break. How do you think it's going to go?
Yeah, I echo what Brownie said again. I do fancy us to nick it 2-1. I was sort of toying with 1-1, but I think half-5, Anfield, you know, it's obviously full house, biggest game since the fans have been back. You know, Burnley was great, but this is, you know, such a massive game so early in the season. I think everyone will be right up for it, and I just think the momentum that'll give us going into the international break is absolutely massive. I sort of half jokingly in a WhatsApp group said the other day, I think whoever wins this game will win the league. But I'm sort of thinking, yeah, it is. I'm sort of thinking it might be true as well. I just think, like, that, you know, if you look at the year we won the league, the run we went on, the winning start we went on, you know, we won the first three games in that period, went into the international break, and it just carries on from there. And I just think the confidence a win on Saturday would give us would be absolutely massive, and I just think we could go on another like mad winning streak and could like blow teams out the water even this early in the season.
That's a nice prospect. Dave, are you confident we're going to get the 3 points on Saturday?
I am, and I agree with what John's just said. I expect us to win on Saturday, and I think, you know, we there's no reason why we can't put together the kind of run that we did 2 years ago. Maybe not necessarily as spectacular as that, but along those lines where you go on a big long winning streak, see no reason why we can't do that. But this is probably, along with Man City, obviously, it's the toughest test that we're going to have over the next few months. But I think we'll win. I think the scoreline will be close. I'll go for 3-2. But I think performance-wise, we'll look at it and think, yeah, you know, we've well deserved that. But I do think it might be a little bit edgy. I think Chelsea have got goals in them. We've not conceded yet, and I don't necessarily think we're going to be able to go three games in a row without conceding. I think Chelsea have got goals in them, and we have two, and I'll go for 3-2 with Mo getting the winner.
Great. Well, that's a great way to end it, guys. A nice positive note. Whether we can pull it off on Saturday remains to be seen, but the lads will be back with you after the game on Saturday with the post-match podcast. And you'll catch us again soon on the midweek edition. But until next time, this has been the Liverpool Way podcast, and we'll see you soon.
Well, the best word I can say, but we'll describe this, was boom. Ooh, what was this? It was really good.